We need your help to keep the Rufus Project and all its episodes online. Unfortunately, we're getting very close to the limit of our free hosting and will shortly need to start paying. How can you help, I hear you ask? So glad you did ask. You can head to our homepage at therufusproject.podomatic.com and hit that donate button to throw an extra few coins our way. Alternatively, if you have a product or service that you feel would be of interest to the Rufus Project listeners, then please get in touch with us at rufusreviews@gmail.com. Thanks so much. Now on with the show. Welcome to The Rufus Project, your fortnightly guide to geek news, movies, both cult and new, as well as what's happening in the local area. The local area being Brisbane at the moment, but we're still looking at expanding out a bit further. I'm your host Trevor Holland, and a little bit later on, you'll be hearing from my good friend and king of cult cinema in Brisbane, Christian Fletcher. So what do we have in store for you this time round? Well, there's a bit of a theme to tonight's episode, and believe it or not, that theme will start with the game review. It does relate to a movie that is shortly going to be getting its own interactive floor show in Brisbane. Very exciting. No more spoilers now, though. You're just going to have to wait until after the geek news. Enjoy the show. Yep, it's time for this fortnight's geek news. A look at what's been grabbing our attention over the past fortnight. I know you're all eager to find out what this podcast's really about, so I'll keep it pretty brief, okay? First up, we'll take a look at music, or more specifically, music sales. I mean, CD sales are way down, but you have digital and streaming services well and truly making up for that difference in revenue. But there's another format that is actually showing an increase that is matching the percentage increase of the streaming services. And that is vinyl. Whether it's because of hipster fascination or just the joy of holding a physical object in your hand when you're looking at your music collection, there's no denying that it's good to see that the black circle is still being spun in homes around Australia and the world. The BBC finally stopped teasing us with little blink and you'll miss them trailers and actually gave us a proper trailer of the new Doctor Who series launching August 23rd. Yes, I'm a geek. Yes, I'm excited. No word yet as to whether or not the show will be fast-tracked onto ABC's iView, who in previous seasons were showing the latest episodes online within an hour of them broadcasting over in the UK. But we all know those that don't want to wait for the Sunday night viewing in Australia will be watching it as soon as they possibly can anyway. Now, despite the Australian and Village Roadshow insisting that Netflix is on the way to Australia, and Netflix responding by saying, nope, we're focusing on Europe, a recent study has shown that almost 30% of video streaming in Australia is through Netflix. Okay, video streaming may not be the biggest market when it comes to the consumption of entertainment in Australia, given our rather shoddy network and the inconsistencies from place to place. But you gotta admit, for a service that's not even available in Australia yet, 30% is a pretty impressive share of the market. And finally, yep, the anti-piracy campaign goes on in Australia. This time it's News Corp, who have approached a Senate inquiry into the proposed Australia-South Korea Free Trade Agreement so that they can put their foot forward in asking that ISPs be made responsible for the enforcement of anti-piracy laws. I'm not entirely sure what a trade agreement between Australia and South Korea has to do with the media's desire to overturn a high court ruling confirming that ISPs are not responsible for policing piracy, but I'm pretty sure the consumer's interest is not at the heart of this request. So News Corp? Well, since we have a bit of a theme to the podcast this week, I thought it only fair that I have a dig around to see if I could find a suitable game review. And lo and behold, I hit pay dirt. Greece the video game, was released back in the heady days of 2010 for both the Wii and the DS. Now, I managed to get my hands on a copy of the DS version of the game, which leaves out some of the features of the Wii version of the game. But I guess the big question is, what is the game actually like? After loading up the DS game, you're very quickly greeted by a rendition of the theme song. It's done fairly well, but it's certainly not the original version. The developers could obviously get the rights to likenesses and the movie name itself, but they had to make do with cover versions for the songs themselves. Once you're in the game proper, you get to choose between Danny or Sandy initially, and you can choose between story mode or quick play mode. Hitting the story mode takes you to a comic book style recreation of key scenes from the movie, which then leads in to the most appropriate song, with whichever character you chose taking the main stage. You see, this is a rhythm game. Starting off with Summer Lovin' as the first level, you get to tap your DS stylus onto the screen, prompted by stars that appear in a certain order, and they are actually in order number, so you get to tap 1, 2, 3, 4, etc., while a pixely version of the character you chose dances around on the screen in the background. Up the top there is a record and a gauge with your character's face on it. The better you do, the further the character moves up the gauge, but mess up too many times and you'll end up spinning around on the record itself, and then it's game over. It's not just tapping in numerical order though. You occasionally get a giant star, which you need to tap very, very, very fast in order to get rid of it before you get back onto the standard tapping again. And occasionally a line or a shape will appear, again with the star on it, and you then have to keep the stylus on top of that star while it moves along the line or shape. It's not very complicated really. Of course, by progressing through the story mode, you'll unlock more characters and songs you can use in the quick play mode. The songs change depending on what character you choose. For example, if you choose Danny, the second level is Grease Lightning, or by choosing Sandy, it takes you to Look at Me, I'm Sandra D, being performed by Rizzo. And if you get through that one, Rizzo actually gets unlocked as a playable character in Quick Play. Just saying. Now, this game certainly doesn't tax the grey matter, but it is hell on the reflexes, requiring some very rapid-fire tapping in order to keep up with the prompts on screen. The hand jive level was particularly frustrating. Now, like I said before, I wasn't able to play the Wii version, but I have checked out some of the differences. In the Wii version, you actually use the Wii Remote's motion sensors, so you actually get to dance along with the prompts on the screen. You can also plug in a microphone, apparently, to go karaoke style, and there's some mini games where you need to fix the car and even race. A very basic racing game, but a racing game nonetheless. The DS version certainly could have done with a bit more variety, that's for sure. And I think that the only thing you would get out of an extended play of the DS version is a bad case of RSI. If you're a Grease fan with various Nintendo hardware lying around, well, you might have a bit more fun with the Wii version, but probably best to stay away from the DS. Oh, the Wii version actually gets video footage from the movie as well, so there's another bonus. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm off to soak my hand in something soothing until the pain goes away.
It is without a doubt one of the most iconic movie musicals, if not most iconic movies of all time, and also one of the most critically and commercially successful. It is the 1978 musical Grease. Originally starting life as a stage musical in 1971, Grease was written by Jim Jacobs and Warren Casey and was based on Jim Jacobs' experiences in a Chicago high school when he was a teenager. The original stage incarnation of Grease is a lot different from the version that we all know and love. It was much grittier and raunchier, almost verging on vulgar. In subsequent productions and in the movie itself, they did tone a lot of this down, tamed things, and made it a lot more palatable and mainstream, and more of a 50s nostalgia. By 1980, 9 years after its original debut off-Broadway, Grease had then transferred to Broadway, become a hit show in London's West End, and had become the 1978 movie musical. So by 1980, Grease was the longest-running Broadway musical of all time. It had to be shows like Cats and Chorus Line to come along and change all that. Many famous names did perform in the original stage production of Grease. Interestingly, Barry Boswick, who plays Brad in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, he was the very first person to play Danny Zuko on stage. Throughout the course of the 70s, other big names performed in Grease productions, Richard Gere, Patrick Swayze, and even a young John Travolta. Having come off playing Saturday Night Fever in 1977, John Travolta was cast as Danny Zuko in the 1978 musical. Saturday Night Fever and the Grease soundtracks are some of the biggest selling soundtracks of all time. So, in the 70s, they were definitely onto a winner with John Travolta. John Travolta pushed for Olivia Newton-John to audition for Sandy. She hadn't done too much acting at that stage, and in the trailer for Grease, they actually say it's her big screen debut. How quickly they forget Tomorrow, the obscure science fiction musical from 1970. Henry Winkler, who we all know is playing the Fonz in Happy Days, declined to play the role of Danny. It was really interesting that they even decided to cast him in the first place. He did fear being typecast, and definitely he would have been from being involved in this. Randall Kleiser directed the 1978 film, which adapted the stage show and took it to a new place. A lot of the iconic songs that we know from that movie were not in the original stage production. Songs were written for the movie like You're the One That I Want, Hopelessly Devoted to You. The Burger Palace Boys became the T-Birds. Subsequent stage productions have kept the songs from the movie in because they are so iconic. I watched a recent documentary where they spoke to all the members of the cast, and they all still speak so fondly of the movie and the fact that making it was an absolute party. They felt like they were back at school. That enthusiasm, that euphoria that you're seeing on screen and the bonding that they had together, that was all legitimate. That was actually how they all got on well together. And I think it really rubs off on screen. Grease did so well both commercially and critically, and worldwide has made over $394 million. And I don't think there's ever a sign of stopping. The stage production of Grease is still one of the most performed productions of all time. There's currently one touring around Australia, and just about every second high school will attempt the stage musical at some time.
Well, here we are again.
Yeah, but this time we're seniors.
And we're going to rule the school.
Get ready for another term at Rydell High with Michelle Pfeiffer and Maxwell Caulfield.
I'm sure you have spotted the theme of this week's podcast by now. And so, for the redeeming features, what else could we possibly do? That's right, this fortnight we're having a look at Grease 2. Again, I'm going to have to call in some help on this one because my version of the redeeming features and reasons to watch this really does come from a bit of a horrified fascination side of you. However, quite fortunately, Christian is back on the line again, and he is a much bigger fan of this movie than I am, so I think it's only right that I enlist his help. Hey, Christian, how are you going?
Great, thank you, Trevor. I'm hearing this and going, oh, should I still be admitting? Is it too soon to be admitting you're a fan of Grease 2? But I've noticed a few more people coming out of the woodwork in recent times, so hey, I wear it proudly as a badge, so I'm happy to be chatting about it tonight because it is whilst I enjoy it and love it quite a lot, it is definitely a cult oddity and very much of its time. So I'd be interested to see Trevor, what your initial thoughts were anyway, having sat through the entire thing.
Tell you the truth, I mean, I do have problems in that the songs just seem to go for a bit too long, which is quite a minor fact when compared to the fact that, well, I actually found it kind of creepy. For this fun, fluffy musical that's following on from such a loved classic that is Grease, just the creep factor in a number of these songs, and especially in Maxwell Caulfield's portrayal as Michael, really, for this clean-cut guy, he was moving into creepy stalker territory when it came to trying to be the right sort of man for Michelle Pfeiffer.
And it is interesting, like, you look at that scene where he, catches Iva the first time, and he goes up to her in the chemistry room or whatever and says, oh, have you read the latest, you know, Superman comic or something? And it's almost like from the moment he sets eyes on her, she is his goal. And yeah, you are right. It does kind of get into this creepy stalker thing, which I'd never actually looked at it before. But for people in the audience who haven't seen the movie, I'll just give you a short rundown in terms of, it's pretty much it's Grease 1 in reverse. And this time, Michelle Pfeiffer plays the lead pink lady, Stephanie. Okay. So, Michelle Pfeiffer plays the lead pink lady. So in many ways, I suppose the Rizzo of the piece, if you want to look at it like that, or I don't know, maybe the Sandy, and Maxwell Caulfield plays Michael, who I suppose is the Danny, but in reverse. So in many ways, the Pink Ladies are the bad girls, and this Maxwell Caulfield, who plays Michael, is well, believe it or not, Frenchie's cousin from the first movie. So they've tied it in that respect. So in many ways, yeah, they've just got the original film, flipped the entire plot around and made it where, you know, he pretty much almost needs to change who he is to fit in with Michelle Pfeiffer and be one of the cool girls. But as Trevor mentioned, it did kind of get to creepy territory. She says in one song, probably the most iconic number or scene from the movie, in this song called Cool Rider, she says she just wants a guy in a leather jacket and a motorbike. And what should Michael do but convert himself into exactly what she wants? So it is interesting when you look at it in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly does have that very strong role reversal. So if you are a fan of the first movie, seeing this flip over is quite an interesting experience. But then the way it goes about, I mean, you look at Sandy in the first movie, and she stayed being Sandy until she finally realized right at the end she had to change to get Danny. But this time around, you have your straight-laced Michael from England, and he early on in the piece realizes what it needs to be, and then he goes about doing that by whatever means necessary. He's taking money to write essays for the T-Birds so that they can pass in order to save up money for a motorcycle.
So essentially he's not necessarily the good guy that he's possibly portraying, but it's almost like he doesn't stay as the good guy, you know, like what you're saying, for long enough for us. It's almost like he's straight away gone, right, I need to be a bad guy to fit in completely. He doesn't delve into that having time of being kind of the square. I suppose early on the T-Birds are picking on him and things like that, but yeah, it does not take the final scene for him to convert. It takes not too long into the movie for him to realize that being square isn't that cool. So, but what I find really interesting is whilst it was the role reversal, there were so many scenes in Grease 2, there are so many scenes in Grease 2 where they're trying to replicate very much scenes from Grease. You know, in Grease we have the big prom scene or the dance scene that was set in the gym. In Grease 2 we have the big talent show, which the Pink Ladies and the T-Birds, of course, because T-Birds perform in talent shows. So that was, I suppose, the opposite for that. And then you've got the final scene of Grease, which is the graduation and the big fair. But in Grease 2, it's a Rockahula Luau, or whatever the final song is. And it's so funny because it's like they're blatantly trying to rip off that final scene of Grease. Did you think that too?
Well, from the outset, because you look at Grease and the opening number, Grease, and it's actually fairly low-key. I mean, it's all animated, and then you've got your first big O-dance number with Summer Nights. But in this, it opens with the song Back to School, and there is literally hundreds of dancers coming from everywhere in this opening number, singing how terrible it is coming back to school, while all looking deliriously happy about it at the same time.
Yeah, exactly, and even the teachers are there dancing as well. And the director, Patricia Birch, I believe it was actually a choreographer. So that sort of puts things in perspective. Any opportunity she can have a million people dancing in one shot, she'll have it. Look at the bowling scene, Trevor, and they had to have a instrumental gap when they all are skidding down the laneways. I'm sure Strike would never let you do that. Just these huge dance numbers, and you think, well, they're way too happy for people that are bowling.
in the bowling scenes, they really didn't seem too worried about foul balls. When bowling, there was a lot of going over the line there.
Yeah, and what did they pretty much say? Oh, if the girls are late, they lose automatically. That's, what is it, the chicks defected, these girls are late, or whatever, some line. But yeah, it's pretty much very much the men being very, I suppose, chauvinistic, more so than they were in the first one. Because of what I did mention earlier, this is set in, I believe, 1961. So this is 3 years after the original Grease. So we're sort of going in, you can notice it too, whilst the songs are all, you know, pretty much original, there's a couple, you know, you're starting to feel it's a very, you know, early 60s type musical. And but that said, the songs, they haven't necessarily tried to make them rock and roll in any respect. And most of them are quite cringeworthy. However, me, you know, being a fan, and I am, you know, and looking at redeeming features, is it bad saying that sometimes I think the songs are possibly the best redeeming feature about the movie? But if we're saying that they're bad, what is that saying about the movie? I don't know. But I definitely find that it's hard to sustain. The first half is definitely amazing, and I find it kind of loses steam. It gets very talky in the second half when we're starting to see Stephanie and Michael become friends at school, get to know each other. Like, he ends up, I think, helping her with her assignments. And then so there's a bit more of that sort of character building. And I think when there's less songs, it kind of becomes a bit, I don't know, it becomes very long. Like, at the two-hour mark, it is a long film anyway, and it doesn't sort of, it lacks a lot of that punch that Grease, the main Grease, oh, it's so successful. But so definitely the first half is the way to go. And, like, we bagged them out, but I do love songs like Scorch Night and Cool Rider, and Michelle Pfeiffer whilst talking about redeeming features, would have to be probably the ultimate redeeming feature of this film. What are your thoughts on her performance, Trevor?
Well, I found that her performance was quite fun. I did find some of the dances that she got to do, again, compared with the choreography, which is incredible in the group numbers, in the big group numbers. But when you've got, like, Michelle Pfeiffer dancing by herself, it just looks a bit dodgy. But entertaining in a way.
You think of that part when she goes, the crowd comes in, the whole world will be shaken, and she like shakes her whole, there's this weird dance move she does. I actually saw an interview with her about 5 years ago where the interviewer turned around and said, my favourite movie of yours is Grease 2. And she took it well, she was very happy. And she even looks back and goes, I can't believe the dance moves they made me do. But she still speaks highly of the movie, and I do believe it was her first film. And interestingly, the following year she ended up having a co-starring role in Scarface, which was the big film, I suppose, that launched her. But we all know Grease 2 happened first. I think Michelle Pfeiffer is, I'm a big fan of her anyway, but I think she's amazing in this film. She looks gorgeous in this movie, and I think she has a great singing voice. You know, we have heard her sing in, Fabulous Baker Boys and Hairspray. So it's good going back to her roots and seeing this is where it all began. But an interesting thing about Grease 2 is I love the fact that it is very tongue-in-cheek. It almost knew it was knew it was a sequel, so it didn't try and be too smart or too sophisticated. It really just went, right, we're a sequel to a really popular movie. Let's just put whatever. And I think as a result, it comes across a lot more fun in many ways too. Like, the reason I'm such a big fan of the movie is I remember as a kid, seeing Grease on TV and then seeing this commercial. This is back when they used to show double features, maybe on Channel 7. And you'd see an ad for this Grease 2. It was always on too late for me to stay up and watch. And a friend at school lent me the video. And I got quite obsessed with it. I was watching it so much. And I think my big thing with it is the fact that Grease, whilst we all love it, and I love it too, we've seen it so much that it's really exciting to see Grease 2 because it doesn't really get too much of a play. And once you do, give it a bit more of a time, and I love the soundtrack and things like that, even though it's very daggy, you do find yourself, it does grow on you, definitely, right. But there's a very small cult for it.
Yeah, that's what I mean, again, with the songs, the songs are played well and truly for fun, and I think my fascinations with the songs, especially some of the later ones, is that behind this happy-go-lucky, very, very upbeat songs, just some of the stuff behind the lyrics and some of the stuff happening. I mean, there's a song about reproduction where they talk about, fertilizing the stamens and stuff like that.
They literally tell you everything, don't they, pretty much? That's the lyrics.
And then you've got the T-Birds, who actually have a song about trolling supermarkets to pick up chicks, which they then sing as their role in the school musical.
And I think the way I gauge, the only way they pretty much won was tying up the doo-wop group who were doing Mr. Sam and the Barbershop Quartet. Tying them to the shower stalls and never to be seen again. Okay, is it that easy to get a part in the talent show?
Must be. But mind you, how many times will Mr. Sandman turn up in movies like this? That's the other thing I want to know.
Oh, I know. And it's quite interesting. But yeah, it does take a bit of a dark thing. And not to ruin for people that haven't seen it, that will want to possibly go out and see it. It does have that real weird ending in terms of, prior to the big finale, the whole motorcycle chase. Without giving too much, Trevor will know what I'm referring to. The scene just before the talent quest where they believe Michael's gone over that cliff. And it sort of takes a really bit of this really, dark sort of, did the motorcyclist die that went over the edge? Yeah, it almost takes it to a really dark place that I'd never really thought of before. So I definitely think the first half is a lot more, happier.
And the true unspoken mystery, the one that never really gets addressed during the talent show itself, is Michael was a piano player. So who's playing the piano?
Oh, yeah. And wouldn't he have been and being the square that he apparently is, he would have been there with bells on to play all the songs of that night. Yeah, it's very interesting. So, I think we've probably ruined a little bit of the ending. But anyway, when we have the big reveal and Stephanie finds out Michael's true identity, it's almost like she doesn't, it's not like Grease where it's, I got chills. It's almost, she pretty much just walks out and goes, so it was you all along. It's always.
That's a very awkward scene. That's what I felt as well.
It's almost that whole scene does feel so strange. And then you've got, just to top it up even more, because you've got the original Grease where they all finish with, we go together, you know, and all the car takes off at the end, everyone's having fun. This ends with this really slow montage of every character pretty much just doing a star jump in the air, like they're posing for a really bizarre yearbook photo.
In fact, it does. It fades into showing them in weird, in staged yearbook photos.
But the thing that's interesting is you've got Grease where it's, we go together. The song in Grease 2 is We'll Be Together. Isn't that interesting?
Yep,
sound familiar?
So I'm kind of getting the feeling that we may have given a bit of an unbalanced view of the movie. I guess it's pretty obvious who is more enthusiastic about this particular one. But look, from whichever side you take it, Christian's great enthusiasm for this movie, which I do admire. I love it. It's fantastic. and me, just from the, well, you see this movie that comes across as so light and fluffy, but has just got these really creepy things. I mean, I didn't mention it before, but there's actually a whole song dedicated to one of the T-Birds trying to seduce a girl by faking that a nuclear attack is about to start. That's just not right.
And the really interesting thing about that, Trevor, of course, the song is called Do It For Our Country. You know, you got songs like Let's Score Tonight, you know, We're Going Prowling, you know, and Reproduction, of course, it's so much sexual innuendo. At least there was bits like that in Greece, you know, the chicks will cream, you know, or the chicks will scream, all this sort of stuff. But it seems like in even in the song titles, they just went out of their way to make it as sexual as possible. It was going into the 80s, so maybe they were thinking it was going to a bit of a different audience, not just the sort of 50s nostalgia that they were getting with the first movie.
Yeah, well, definitely there's no innuendo there. There's no way you could possibly get a double meaning out of it.
Definitely. So yeah, as Trevor mentioned, you know, there are good and bad things to the movie, but has a lot of memories for me as a kid, as I said, seeing the video and things like that. So I think I've had more time to get to love it, I think. So I definitely recommend people to give it a go. And more of the curiosity factor too, because when I think of sequels that I haven't seen, I start to get very fascinated because I'm like, oh yeah, how does it continue? So yeah, this one does pretty much continue the Grease canon, I suppose the word is. It even went so well enough in 1982 that there were actually plans to make a Grease 3.
Oh, God.
And thank God that was put on the back burner. And I even remember about 10 years ago, there was rumors of Olivia Newton-John, John Travolta reuniting to do a Grease 3, and Kylie Minogue was their daughter, so it was set now. Yeah, I'm glad they disbanded that idea. And I have heard them singing together recently, and maybe they're best to have stayed in the 70s with those songs.
I actually did hear a little snippet of them singing a duet not too long ago, and it was terrible.
Yes, it might have been the one I was watching earlier, and I wasn't. Let's just say John hasn't been singing for a while.
Yep. That was fantastic.
I'd love to hear what everyone thinks about Grease 2, and hopefully don't throw too many things at us if you don't like it.
Yep, absolutely. Since, when Grease itself has its little interactive screening coming up, you'll have a chance to throw things at us, so please don't. But if you wanted to let us know what you thought of the movie, if you have gone to see it, please let us know in the feedback. If you are going to come to the Grease night, you can just say, pitch to the podcast, guys, and we'll happily put our hands up. We may regret it, but, you know, we definitely want to hear what you thought of the movie and I guess what you thought of us recommending it for you.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Christian.
There's more romance and rock and roll in Grease 2.
As you may have guessed by now, this podcast has got a bit of a theme to it, thanks to the Interactive Grease floor show performance that we've mentioned a few times already. So I'm very happy to be sitting down with the two people who will be bringing Danny and Sandy to life on the night. So Willem, Tash, thanks for talking to the Rufus Project.
Thank you for having us.
Well, to start off, just give us a bit of a rundown about yourselves and what you normally do, Tash.
Well, I do have a Bachelor of Arts degree in Applied Theatre, so I'm an actor and performer as well. And I'm also a burlesque dancer who goes by the name of Ruby Little. So I do, that's kind of the performance side of stuff that I do, but I do a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff for a lot of events as well. I'm currently the showcase director for the Brisbane branch of an international arts organisation called RAW, where we provide opportunities and resources to local and emerging artists. I'm an event producer for Bird Studios, and I've got a burlesque show that I'm hosting at the end of the month. And I have a blog called Factory Diaries, which is all about the Brisbane art scene because I love it so much.
Very good. Willem?
I'm not quite that impressive.
Yes, you are.
You're very impressive.
Yes, you are.
I'm trying to do a Kickstarter right now, and they demand that you write down a section about yourself on it, and I can do the entire Kickstarter, I just can't write that one section. So, if you need to know about me, I spend a lot of time on public transport.
Are you working on a play at the moment, I think I heard?
Oh, yeah. But I'm directing a dream play by August Strindberg that should be on the stage in November. Probably start trying to advertise that as well. But yeah, mostly buses.
So moving on to Greece, when did you guys first see Greece and really what were your first impressions?
I saw it when I was a little girl. I grew up on lots of musicals and weird shows. Like I grew up watching Rocky Horror Picture Show and Cabaret and Sound of Music and stuff like that. So Grease was one of the ones I grew up watching, and I just loved it because everyone seems so cool and hip, and I know now that it's probably not the best film with messages that you should be telling high school students and young girls, but it's still a really enjoyable movie.
My first impressions of Grease, my sister used to love it when she was very, very young, and I was even younger than her, and so I hated it. I never stayed around when she put it on TV. So I only caught bits and pieces of it, and I always kind of knew the music in the back of my head. And it was only in high school that I thought, you know, I should actually sit down and watch this to work out what it's all about. So I got myself a DVD, and the DVD skipped like crazy, so I missed a good half hour of the film. And then I went to university, and I'm like, oh, they have a copy here, so I got that copy. It skipped even worse, I missed a good hour of the film. So finally, at Goma, during one of their cinema seasons, they were playing all these dance movies. And I finally went to see Grease and Saturday Night Fever on the same night. And that is a terrible double feature. But Grease is good.
Excellent. Well, from that, I mean, what would be, say, your favourite scene or character from the movie?
I think Rizzo is my favourite character, just because she's, I guess, a lot more complex and less of a bad role model. I guess she's not the nicest of girls at the start, but she's got issues. She's got reasons. She doesn't change herself for no man like Sandy does. And my favourite scene is definitely the slumber party. That's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I like the opening animation, because that's almost so out of the style that they made Grease in. It's like this dirty Sesame Street 70s animation. It sets you up for something that's not what this movie is.
Yeah, it doesn't really advertise itself very well in the opening. As you two are the lucky ones who are going to bring these two iconic characters to life in an interactive movie screening, what are your impressions of Sandy and Danny?
John Travolta looks really weird.
I think Danny's a bit of an asshole because he obviously likes Sandy, but he can't acknowledge that because it'll ruin his reputation. But then Sandy goes and changes, so that's a bit shit of her as well.
I think Sandy's like a real, almost non-character in Greece, because everything is like happening around her, and you really find out what she's really going to do in this situation at the very, very end, where she obviously makes the worst possible decision.
Yeah,
she could.
There's really not much to her at all as a character.
And you know, John Travolta's just got a really small nose and a really big mouth, so it's kind of not balanced, right?
Well, moving on from that, we probably established that the characters are a little flawed, but hey, that makes them even more interesting, doesn't it?
Definitely.
So, what do you think is the great appeal of actually having this interactive experience with Grease?
Distract from John Travolta's face.
I guess it'll be great because I know when I'm watching it, I'm always singing along and wanting to dance along to all of those iconic scenes and musical numbers. So I guess it'll be really fun for the audience to see that actually happening, and hopefully we'll get some of up there dancing with us if they want to.
Yeah, I think that's the great thing about the interactive floor show, is that it makes it okay to get up and dance and sing along in the cinema situation, where you can do it with your friends and your family, and no one's going to tell you to sit down and shut up.
Occasionally they do in Rocky Horror screenings if it's the first time they've been there. That's a different story. Okay, so we covered over some of the stuff that you guys are doing aside from Grease. So is there anything in particular that you'd like to plug now and get people to log to as well?
The burlesque show I'm hosting at the end of the month is called Birdlesque. It's happening at the Bearded Lady on Thursday the 31st of July. Tickets are $10 pre-sale. You can find it on Facebook at Bird or Birdlesque.
And I'll be putting a link in the description below this very podcast, so take a look, guys.
My play in November, A Dream Play, will be playing at the New Globe Theatre on a date. possibly multiple dates. Been working very hard on it, and it's going to be awesome. Also, Groundswell on the Gold Coast happens every week. It's poetry, and it's music, and it's a lot of fun. So people should also go to that if they live nearby.
Excellent, excellent. Again, we'll make sure we put details down below. So what is the word?
You're just going to have to come along and find out. Or bird.
Bird. Couldn't help it.
You could sing it.
No, I honestly couldn't. I don't know the lyrics.
That's
okay.
Well,
on that note, Tash, Willem, thank you very much for talking to the Rufus Project.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our huge month of cult movies at New Globe Theatre continues this July with some of the greatest cult classics of all time. On the 20th of July, we have one of the modern cult classics, Ben Stiller in 2001's Zoolander, screening at 7 p.m. You have heard us mention in the past Tommy Wiseau's The Room. This is screening on the 22nd of July at 7 p.m. and tickets are definitely advisable to be pre-purchased before the night as it's looking to sell out. If you want to experience a modern cult classic and possibly one of the most bizarre cinema experiences you'll ever have, head along to The Room on Tuesday night. David Lynch fans, how about going back to his first 1977 feature, Eraserhead, screening on the 23rd of July at 6:30 p.m. How about a bit of Python? On Wednesday the 30th of July, we have the classic from 1975, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Want something that you can bring the kids along to? Why not head along to Princess Bride on Sunday the 3rd of August at the New Globe Theatre. For full details about upcoming events, find the New Globe Theatre on Facebook or visit my website www.christianfletcher.com. It's just under a month now until the Grease interactive screening with live floor show at Chanel Theatre on the 12th of August. We're really excited to be screening the 1978 cult movie musical with a live floor show bringing to life some of your favourite parts. Trevor and myself from the Rufus Project may or may not be involved with this floor show. Rehearsals are off into full swing and it promises to be a great experience. The remastered version of Grease will be screening, so in many ways you've never seen it like this before. Dress in your best 50s wear and get ready to sing along with all your favourite songs with Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta. And our cast of 20 will bring your favourite scenes to life.
It's competition time. Now, given the theme of this podcast, I think it's pretty obvious what we're giving away this time. Are you ready? It's a cult classic from the 70s. It's got singing and dancing. That's right! This is your chance to win a double pass to see Monty Python and the Holy Grail at the New Globe Cinema on the 30th of July. Ha ha! Had ya! So how can you win these glorious, glorious tickets? Simple! Just head to our Twitter page, our Facebook page, our YouTube comments or the Podomatic comments and leave the comment, nee! Spell it however you like. All the links are down below. Good luck! Thanks so much for listening to The Rufus Project. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed putting it together. And again, if you can make it, please come see us with all the other guys at the interactive screening of Grease on the 12th of August at the Chanel Cinema at the University of Queensland St. Lucia. If you can't make it there, then we still want to hear from you. Please leave us your comments or feedback via Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Podomatic. Hey, you can even leave us a review on iTunes. It'd be much appreciated. We're also always on the lookout for people that we can feature in our local wildlife section. So if you would like to talk to the Rufus Project, or you know someone who you think might be a suitable candidate, then definitely let us know. We're also more than happy to plug community, non-commercial, or small alternative events completely free of charge. That's right. If you don't want to leave your information in public, then you can always send us an email at rufusreviews@gmail.com. So until next time, I couldn't think of a suitably witty sign out, so feel free to add your own. See you next time. Bird. The bird's the word. Well, look, someone had to do it all right. The Rufus Project is getting close to the limits of its free hosting. To help us keep the previous episodes online and keep bringing you great content, we need your help.
If you are interested in helping the Rufus Project or have a product or service that would be of interest to us here at the podcast, please drop us an email at rufusreviews@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast anytime, the recent episodes and previous ones at therufusproject.podomatic.com.
And while you're there, feel free to click on the donate button, and hopefully, if we can get enough help, those more generous of you might just get a little something extra from your generosity.
Ooh. Sorry. No doubt. And your help will ensure the Rufus Project keeps going, providing more of gaming reviews, movie reviews, local wildlife, and all your other favourite sections of the fortnightly podcast.